Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And here we go. Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, very special edition. We are with the Lake Erie chapter of the Penn State Alumni Association, and we are recording in front of a crowd. Let my listeners know that you're here. Come on, let's hear it. That's it, a very enthusiastic crowd. Love it. Let's make this easy. We are
Penn State!
Very good. All right. Now, since I'm all alone here doing the show, I can't do it by myself. I don't have one of my trusty co-hosts here. What we're going to do is ask the audience, come up, ask questions, give us topics. And who do we have first? Come up, give your name, and give us your question.
Hi, Jim. Scott from Erie. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Go ahead, Scott.
So, this season, who is your favorite Alumni Association representative, and why is it Paul Clifford?
Oh, that's a very self-serving question there. My favorite is my new good friend, Mr. Scott Nick. Tell you what, let me just tell you real quick. Scott reached out to me a couple months ago, called me out of the blue. I didn't know Scott at all. Said, Jim, we do this event. It's a bunch of Penn State folks, Lake Erie, and would love to have you come speak. And I'm like, well, how many other people did you ask before me, Scott? There we go. Right answer.
John Kaplan.
You asked him before me?
No, but you were going to interview him.
Anyway, we've become friends and over the phone, and it's just wonderful to meet Scott in person here finally and this great group. Scott, you could grab a shirt, hat, your pick, man. You get it. All right, so who's next up? Who else wants to talk? Come on up.
So good evening. This is Mick from Erie. So,
hey, Mick.
Every year I hear the offensive line is getting better. And I hear this is the year for the offensive line, but I've heard that for so many years now. Is this the year for the offensive line?
Well, I'll tell you what. Before I give my opinion, I'm going to ask you, what's your opinion? Do you think this is finally the year?
I'm going to have to see it to believe it because I'm just not believing it yet. No.
Well, I'll tell you why I think it is. The biggest thing was Olufashanu coming back. 9 out of 10 guys in his position, first-round pick, he would have been a first-round draft pick, no doubt about it. Millions of dollars in his pocket right now, but he chose to come back to Penn State. And there's a cascading effect with this. It's not just that he is back. That means someone who had to be a starter now could be a backup and be part of it. Drew Shelton, the freshman who did a nice job last year, he's actually going to be depth now. Coverage at right tackle, coverage at left tackle for injuries. They're deeper. They have star players now. Watch also, I'm going to give you one name, Vega Ioane, who's not supposed to start. I believe he'll be starting before the end of the year. The kid's 350 pounds and an athlete. Not too bad, huh? Good question.
Thank you.
And you can help yourself. Shirt, hat, you get paid for being part of it. All right, who's next? Who has a question? We're going to start right here. I know who this is. This is Kristen.
Kristen from Erie, Pennsylvania.
Go ahead, Kristen.
What about the additions to the new Big Ten?
Which ones?
All of them.
You mean the West Coast addition to it? I know a lot of people talked about that as college football as being regional. And I'm old enough to remember when Penn State came into the Big Ten, it's like, oh, my God, these guys from way out east are coming into the Big Ten. Now we're going all the way to the West Coast for those teams. But I'll tell you what, the Pac-12 was going to implode. Who was going to pick them up? I don't have a problem with it. I think it's fun. And here's the fun part. Take this in the positive way. Is there anyone here who went down to the Auburn game last year? Okay.
Oh, rub it in.
Did you have as good a time as I did?
I had a blast. Yeah, wonderful.
And what playing a new team from the Southeast Conference, going there, it was tremendous. It was exciting. Now, how many folks are going to be to the West Virginia game this year? Again, haven't played them in years, and there was so much excitement for it. Well, I kind of feel the same way. Can you not wait USC coming to Happy Valley. Right, Kristen? You know, you asked a question, you're the first to applaud, because that's going to be fantastic. And who wants to go out to L.A. to watch a game, too, out there? Yeah, isn't that great? And I feel the same way about Oregon and Washington. I want to go there. I want to see those games. I want them to come to Happy Valley. So I'm excited about it. And I'll throw in one other question, because this is a topic that often comes up. When you do expansion, why do you do it? USC seemed like a natural. They bring in the L.A. market, right? Right now, people are, why Washington? Why Oregon? But I think a part of that is it helps the West Coast, USC and UCLA, to have people to play that are already on the West Coast. The other part of it, this is my prediction, Big Ten has time slots at noon, late afternoon with CBS, evenings with NBC. How about another TV contract for like a late night game from the West Coast? Would that not be great? Seeing a Penn State game, 10:30 out at UCLA? I think that'll be part of it too. Great, great, great question. And Kristen, did you get something? All right. Who's next? Who's got a question? I saw some hands. Oh, there. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Jim, a lot of excitement around the team this year. Maybe not game by game, but maybe break down the season for us. What, like a prediction on the final record and who might be teams that we want to watch out for, maybe, you know, being our toughest competition?
Good question. I'll tell you, the obvious answers to the tough questions are Michigan and Ohio State, right? That's every year. And we'll give you the couple games outside of those. You might be concerned about Iowa, crazy defense, a couple turnovers. They turned the game into a rock fight. Same thing with Illinois. So those games a little bit scare me. But I think it's going to come down to, obviously, Michigan and Ohio State. But I do believe they'll get over the hump. I think Penn State will go 1-1 against those two teams. I think they'll beat one of them. If you put a gun to my head, I think they'll beat Michigan. And, you know, they'll have one loss. And then, God forbid, they just rotate wins with each other and all three of them end up with one loss. We'll see how that works out for tiebreakers. That'll be fun, right? All right. By the way, for those of you who didn't know, that's the famous Paul Clifford, head of the Penn State Alumni Association, who asked that last question. Who's up next? Here we go.
Hi, I'm Dave. I'm just curious. I know they took the Joe Paterno statue down years ago. Is there any chance that'll ever come back, or what can we do to try to petition to have something like that, you know, put back up? I mean, it's just,
it's
everyone
wrong.
Has their own, you know, theory or whatever on it all, and I think a lot of people think it is wrong, yeah. But I mean, is that something that it's all up to the NCAA or?
Well, no, it's Penn State has to make that decision. They made the decision to take it down. They'll have to make the decision to put it back up. And it's an interesting thing. Did any of you a couple years ago, John Ziegler? He's a very strong advocate for Paterno and Sandusky, and he came out with a very long podcast. And I had the executive producer of that show on our show, and he really defended the university very well. And this may not be a popular take, and I'm a very strong supporter of Joe Paterno. I think what they did to him was god-awful. It was terrible. And I think the people at Penn State who let that happen, I'm not very happy with either, which I think is a common feeling. The only problem I have with all of it is, you know what? If you bring that statue back up, or even you bring up the conversation, those of us who are supportive of it, we're all great. We're going to cheer. But what you're also going to do is you're going to pick at that scab a little bit. And there are people who are the never joke. They're never going to forgive. And I'm talking national people, the national media. What they will do is they'll again replay everything for us again. The cult at Penn State, the football only Penn State, which has got to be about the absolute worst take in the world about Penn Staters. And I think what's going on tonight is a perfect example of what Penn State is really about. The problem is, there are so many outsiders who do not understand what Penn State culture means. They really don't. And that's why sometimes just even having to bring up that conversation again, do we really want to go through that pain again? And we would. We really would if this statute came back up. And I know there's also the conversation. A lot of people are lobbying for Joe Paterno Field at Beaver Stadium. And I think that would be fantastic. But again, it would just dredge up so much of the old stuff. I'm not sure about you guys, but I'm not sure I'm ready to go through that again. So I know that's not exactly a flowers and rainbows kind of answer there, but it's the truth, or it's how I feel about it. But great question, really is. All right, who's next? Give me a more optimistic kind of question. Give me a better topic.
Turn this the flavor around a little.
Yes, thank you.
Luke Luther, prior Penn State Alumni Association president. Nice to see you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
There's a lot of sports pundits and college football analysts who are just raving or making great predictions, if you will, about our tandem running back of Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. They're saying it could be like the best 1-2 running game in the Big Ten. I'm pretty sure it's probably the best we've had in two decades. You think they're that good?
I do. And, you know, well, first of all, I'll bring up a couple of things. It's a fun question talking about those guys. There are a lot of people, and oh my God, I hate to say this out loud. And I think I'm going to edit this tape and take this part out. There's a couple running backs at Michigan that are pretty good. And the national scene, a lot of folks think they might be the two best. The pair of best running backs in the country on one team. However, considering our Penn State guys, they're just sophomores, but it does remind me, I'm going to bring this up. Who remembers Franco and Lydell? Oh, yeah, there we go. There's enough old guys like me out here. And that was quite, and ladies, and that was quite a group too. But I'll tell you what it does. It just carries on that Penn State legacy. And what I really love to hear in talking to some of the people internal to the program, they will talk to you about those two kids and how hard they've worked after that great freshman season each one of them had. It's easy to get full of yourself when you play the way those guys did, but they are looking to get better and have done the work to get better. So I'm very proud of them, and I've been hearing so much from where I used to record down in Harrisburg. That was the area that Nick Singleton came from. So I was able to talk to people who knew him from high school, and they just raved about this kid in high school and how good he was and how good a kid he was. And nothing has happened since to change my mind about that first impression. And just to add a little story, I got to meet Nick's dad when he came up to me at the spring game, the blue-white game. He listens to our show, and he's a mailman. He says, "I listened to you on the route." You know, all of a sudden, I'm a lot more careful what I say about Nick Singleton, knowing that his dad is listening to the show. So anyway, but it's a great question. Are they the very best in the country? Like I said, Michigan would argue about it, but they're pretty special. And I'll tell you what, going back to the other question about the offensive line, that will make them even better. It's going to be a good offensive line. All right, who's next? Come on up, and let me hand over the mic to you.
So we know how good the running backs are. We know how good the offensive line is. We know the defense is great with Manny Diaz. Now the only question is going to be Drew Allard, quarterback. I think everybody thinks that this team is going to go as far as Drew will take them. What do you think?
I think there's a lot of truth to that. In fact, I get into a debate often with one of my cohorts about how important Drew Aller is. And it's because of how good the rest of the team is. The defense is sensational. The coaching, I mentioned it here earlier, I'm a monster Manny Diaz fanboy. I think he's fantastic. The offense has all the pieces. It's will the quarterback be the guy? The tools are all there, but what I'm going to give is the warning. This is his first year as a starter. There's going to be some mistakes. And we had the question come up on our show, is there anybody who wishes Sean Clifford was still on the team? Well, let me ask. Anyone here wish Sean Clifford was still the quarterback?
Nervous.
Okay. Someone here claims that he's getting AARP benefits, and I'm the one who usually jokes he's been a 13-year starter, but I think we're all excited about Drew Aller, and we will all remain excited until he makes his first mistake, right? And it will happen. It's going to happen. But I think what we could all be confident in, when we saw him first game last season against Purdue, he was thrown into the fire. Opening game, national TV, night game. Boy, did he show he was poised. It's going to be, can he react after a mistake? I think he can. He's poised. He's got the huge arm. He's coachable. He's learned. If you saw early tapes of him in high school, he was not that number one type player when he was an underclassman in high school. He worked that hard to get better, which I think shows he's coachable. I made a long answer out of it. Yes, I think he'll be the guy. Okay, we've got someone else coming up. Here we go.
Thank you very much. Bill Cox, Alumni Blue Band.
Hey, Bill.
My question is, what about Friday night football games at Beaver Stadium? You mentioned the Purdue game last year. That, I believe, was Friday night. What are the prospects for Friday nights at Beaver Stadium? And I'd like to hear some sentiment from the crowd, so if you could lead us in a discussion.
Well, okay, we'll start it. Who here is in favor of Friday night games at Beaver Stadium instead of Saturday afternoon?
Thank you.
And I'll tell you what is part of that. And James Franklin does not like anything out of the routine. Doesn't like it at all. And Friday night does that. But what you'll also see is this also is about money, television money. The networks, if you're Ohio State, if you're Michigan, if you're Penn State, you are the primetime best games. You know, they have those windows set up for Saturday. You don't have to be like a MAC team playing on Thursday night or like Pitt having to play on a Thursday night, right? Oh, come on. It's all right to make fun of. Is it all right to make fun of Pitt here in Erie? Okay. So I don't think you're going to see that except for these special occasions like Penn State has done. First game of the year, which was last year with Purdue. It doesn't really hurt Penn State at all, the preparation. And I'll mention, too, Michigan State. Penn State is playing them on a Friday night, day after Thanksgiving. And James Franklin does what he always does, is he complains about being out of his routine. But let me share with you what I think James Franklin is doing behind closed doors about that game. He's jumping up and down because he doesn't have to play an outdoor game against Michigan State in late November on their home field. He's playing indoors. He's playing at Detroit, and not many people talk about this. The Penn State team would fly into Detroit and then have to bus an hour and a half to East Lansing, of all places, in late November. Do you want to do that?
Nope.
I don't. Instead, they are going to fly direct to Detroit. They're already there. Got the temperature-controlled stadium, playing in an NFL stadium. Meanwhile, Michigan State, they have to bus it to Detroit. This is why I think James Franklin is jumping for joy about the arrangements for that game. So when he starts complaining, well, you know, it's a short week, late in the year, do not pay attention to him. Listen to Jim, not to James.
Well, Jim, there's a constituency in Pennsylvania that goes to Friday night football games at high school or in Pennsylvania. And so there's going to be some feedback from them if it happens to us.
And James Franklin will mention that, and I will also mention, because some of you have already spoken to me here this evening, know this. I will never, ever, ever pass up the opportunity to tell people I'm from Berwick. okay? And if anyone here follows high school football closely, you know what Berwick means for high school football. So, yes, I appreciate Friday nights belong to the high schools. Especially if you're a Berwick Bulldog. Next question.
Hey there, I'm Nyla. I'm from Du Bois, Pennsylvania. I want to stay on the topic of James Franklin. So I feel like people are kind of in two camps. Either they love him or they're really critical of some of the on-field choices that he's made over the past couple years. So kind of interested in your thoughts on whether you're a supporter. Hindsight is always 20/20. You know, what are your thoughts on some of those calls that he's made?
I'll tell you what, Nyla?
No, yeah.
Great question. And you should turn into our show producer because, seriously, I literally yesterday recorded a full hour show on exactly that topic. All the more reason, download the podcast, Keystone Sports. And here was my take on it. I know there are folks, and we have lots of listeners, who are very negative about James Franklin. And I think they are completely wrong. And I'd like you to know, I don't think of myself as a homer. I'm a fan, but I'll give my real take on things. James Franklin, I'll tell you now what I really hate. James Franklin, well, he's a good CEO. Let me translate what people mean when they say that. He doesn't know his X's and O's, right? That, oh, he's a good recruiter. No. He's not a good coach. He's a damn good coach. And he does know his X's and O's. And I've had people say, I mentioned Manny Diaz earlier, who I think is a brilliant defensive coordinator. Mike Yursich, great offensive coordinator. But if you think those coordinators are doing anything that James Franklin hasn't talked to them about and being part of, you are wrong. And if you've met him in person, and I met him in a very – not in my – status as a radio show host. I met him in a social setting. He made me feel like I was the only other person in that room. He was fantastic. And there was only one other college coach who ever made me feel that way. And again, I'm going to ask for the old guys. Who here remembers Jim Valvano, the basketball coach, NC State? I got to meet him when he used to coach at Bucknell, believe it or not. Not far from Berwick, by the way. And he came in when I was a kid. I was in 10th grade. How old was that? 15 years old. Oh, my God. I went gaga over the guy. If I weren't 5.5 foot tall, but 6.5 foot and could make a jump shot, I'd have followed him to the ends of the earth. That is the same feeling I had when I met James Franklin. And he's charismatic. He makes you feel important, makes you feel family. And I'm probably, again, making it too long an answer. I am on the pro-James Franklin side, and I think when we get that, you know, the second-guessing kind of thing went on game day, is he perfect? No, but no coaches. None. I'll bet you talk to an Alabama fan, they'll tell you the mistakes that Nick Saban made. They will. But I'm very much on the pro-James Franklin side.
Cool. Thanks.
Yep.
This is Ann from Erie, and I wanted to ask you, you talked about the offense and the defense. What about the special teams? Are they up to the rest of the team?
Okay, who's next? That is a great question. We don't know. And what's scary to me a little bit is that James Franklin had a couple scholarship kickers. He has a scholarship punter, a scholarship place kicker, and he chose to bring in a transfer portal guy and for both of those positions. The problem with that is that's James saying, I don't have the confidence in what I've got so far. Now, there'll be competition. I think James knows that this team is special enough that he just wants to make sure. But my fingers are crossed on the special, on the kicker specifically. There's a couple women shirts in somewhere. That's all. All right. Anyone else? There we go.
Hello, I'm Tom from Erie, and I know you've been talking or you've said really nice things about Manny Diaz during the show so far. So what's your feeling on him? Is he a long-term commit to stay at Penn State, or does he possibly leave to be a head coach again after this season, or maybe mid-season?
Well, he's not going to leave midseason, but will he be moving on? Yes. Will he be long-term? No. And the reason for that is he's just too good. And I know he had the head coach job at Miami, didn't last long, things didn't go right. But everything I've heard about him as far as being able to recruit, relate to the players, you know, non-X's and O things, have been very good, have been exceptional. And I think it's obvious what he does on the field. It's not only good, it's exceptional. It's and I have a guy on my show by the name of T. Frank Carr. I don't know if you folks listen to T. Frank really knows what he's talking about. And he does the film analysis, and it's the only time I hear him say, my God, I wasn't sure what he was doing here, and he did this and this. It's so sophisticated. And I'll give you one other little anecdote, and this was an off the record, so I won't tell you who the player was, but I got to chat with one of the current defensive players, and I asked him about Manny Diaz. He just gets this big smile on his face and goes, he's a genius, an absolute genius. And this is from, you know, a player on the team. So I'm as I said, I'm a fanboy. I love Manny Diaz. My fear is we're not going to keep him long term. But the one thing, I hope he doesn't go to a program just to go. Like Joe Moorhead, several years ago, he took the head job at Mississippi State. Now, it was a Southeast Conference job, well-paying, but it probably wasn't a good fit. So I just hope he sticks around till there's a good job, a really good opening for him. But no, I don't think he'll be here long term, unfortunately. I hope they learn, though, what he teaches them. All right. Anyone else? Here we go. Go ahead and do it.
Hey, it's me, Christopher Walken. I'm from here, there, everywhere. It's great to see you guys. My question is this. Yeah, got the second Penn State game. I love watching the games on the TV when I'm not making movies. And the second game is on Peacock. You know, what's Peacock? Come on, you know what I'm saying? I need to be on, like, the regular shows. My question is, how many of these games are going to be on Peacock? And I just have one thing to say. When I get on the dance floor, you call me Flash. Boom, bam, boom.
Well, before you go, I have a quick question for you. Where was it you hit the wristwatch?
Hey.
All right, who understood the reference? Could you guys explain it to everybody else?
You're
That's another one. Okay, no more cowbell.
You're very funny. My stomach's hurting. Stop the jokes, please.
The reference to the question about the Penn State-Delaware game is on Peacock. Streaming, unfortunately, in all of sports, this is becoming the reality, is that streaming sports. I suggest most of those places, and I'm the guy, and again, for those who haven't seen, here's my drinking glass. Yes, I'm a New York Mets fan. Earlier in the season, the Mets played on Apple TV, a Friday night game, one game. I got my Apple subscription for that month. So, yeah, hardcore. And I think that's going to be the case, but it's going to become more and more the reality. That's where the money is. And it's interesting, and I'll relay this to something else. We all know that the Big Ten signed the huge TV contract with Fox, CBS, NBC, and Peacock is owned by NBC. It is part of that contract. But if you remember, Big Ten said, no night games in November. We don't do that. Well, until the TV contract became big enough, and NBC said, you know, we're doing Saturday night games. Yes, we meant November also. Where did you think, you know, we signed for like 16 weeks of this? Well, guess what? 16 weeks goes into November. So for the money, they did November night games, and now they're going to do streaming games too. It's reality. If you want the big cash, you live with that stuff. All right. Who else? Steph, come on up.
So it's Ann again. I'm talking about the money from the TV contracts. What are they putting some of that money to the NIL? How's that working out?
Okay. Now, the NIL is completely separate from those monies. And the interesting thing, just bringing up NIL, you have to, if you're talking about college football right now, you have to talk about NIL. For those who don't know, this is where the players' name, image, and likeness, they can now make money on the side. If Scott, with his wonderful business, said, gee, I want Drew Aller to endorse my company, he can pay Drew Aller all he wants to do that. And the thing is, the NCAA and college football could have prevented the mess that they have now. They were signing these billion-dollar contracts and gave none of it to the players. The coaches were making $6, $7, $8, $9 million. The players, nothing. They could have done something to prevent that. Pandora's box is now open. NIL, you have to deal with it. And I know NIL is a sore subject for Penn Staters, right? You know, we don't like it, do we? Is there anyone here who likes NIL? For our listeners, there's not one hand going in the air. And the thing is, I think we have to look at it a little different. If we want to compete, we want to compete with Ohio State. Guess what? This is part of the game. It's part of it. The second thing I think to remember with NIL, it's easy to just see the those newspaper articles or online articles. They're driving Teslas and BMW. You're the backup quarterback driving a new BMW. Why do they need my money? You know, that's not right. But there's where's Paul? Is he still here? Over. There's over 800 Penn State student athletes. And guess what? Not all of them are playing football and getting that those big money contracts. In fact, a lot of them are not even on scholarship. And NIL dollars will also help those student athletes. And I don't think that's talked about enough. So, yes, we all want the football team to be good, to excel, and NIL is a reality. But it's also reality for the rest of the sports. And I think the rest of us, just as Penn Staters, would like to support our student athletes, wouldn't we? And especially those who aren't making those big money deals. Good question, though. Good question. Anyone else?
Hey, Jim. Scott from Erie. Long time listener. Second time calling. There's been a lot of discussion about the responsibilities of Coach Franklin tonight. A lot of criticisms about how he does X or how he does Y or how he does Z or how he does A or how he does B or how he does C. Sounds like he has a lot of different responsibilities. Is that a complex job? What's your understanding of his actual responsibility and role?
When you start to hear that CEO adjective placed on him, it is the case with every college football coach, big time football. You have so many off the field responsibilities. I remember, and this was a couple years ago, he was at an event that I attended where his calendar is completely full, and there's that many more people with requests for him to make appearances. So, yes, that is part of it, and I'm sure he wishes, he could concentrate more on football. In fact, this is why if you ever see these college coaches, they're going back to the NFL because then I could just worry about football and not all the other stuff. But, yeah, that off-the-field stuff, it's a huge, huge part of it. You know, besides the recruiting, the fundraising, on and on and on. And like NIL kind of plays into it a little bit. There's responsibilities that come up with that too. So, yes, it's a very complex job. Remember, it's a billion-dollar industry with college football, and it's the James Franklins who are running it. So, good question. Anybody else? Oh, here we go. Hustling his way up here.
Yes. Hustling. Mick again. So a couple of different comments. First one was there was a comment about Friday night games, and there was a discussion about James Franklin not wanting to take his kids out of the routine. But there's a lot of Penn State fans that travel a lot of miles to get to a Penn State game. And if they had to take an extra day of vacation or whatever, they might not be able to get there. And I think there ought to be some concerns about the fans, not just the players. So to me, that would be a concern.
That's true. And the unfortunate thing is I'm not sure often the fans are taken into consideration, if that's your more general, statement to make. And I think this is one that kind of coincides, though, with, what James Franklin wants, with the university wants, and with the fans. Do you want Friday night games?
No.
And I don't think many fans do. It does throw us off our routine also. And especially even worse, you know, like the Thursday night games. Middle of the week, a lot of folks have to travel to get to State College. It would mean Thursday off work, Friday off work. So I'm in agreement. I want it to be Saturday is for college football. Friday night is high school football. And leave Thursday night football to the Macs of the world.
The next comment was, it discussed the offensive line earlier, and I think last year the middle of the defensive line was a little weak, and I'm wondering, what's the middle of our defensive line going to look like this year? Have they improved? Are we getting better? Or are we going to be in the same situation?
That's a topic that comes up a lot, and thanks for the question, and a good one on the defensive line. The defensive ends are phenomenal. Okay, they're phenomenal. At defensive tackle, there's a lot of numbers, and what we're missing is 330-pound stud, one technique tackle in the middle, stuff in the run. We all want that. The problem is there are not many of those guys. And James Franklin, I think the point he makes is a good one. We don't want you just because you're big. You know, big and good is better. And he would rather have the 300-pound good football player than a 330-pound not-so-good football player. But with that said, where there were players I think that were undersized, Akeem Beeman is the guy I'll bring up. He's put on about 20 pounds in the offseason and hasn't lost the athleticism. I do think they'll be better, but if I were an opposing team – and I have to strategize against this Penn State defense, which is so good everywhere else. I used the reference earlier. I would try to turn it into a rock fight. I'm going to go up the middle. I'm going to try to play 3 yards in a cloud of dust if I can. Just hammer it right at Penn State. Not because that area is weak, but it's just not quite as strong as everywhere else, where they are just elite pretty much everywhere else. All right. How about it? Anybody else? Yeah, come on up. I hope you're enjoying this. I am. Some great questions.
Hello, this is Tom again from Erie. So a pretty sore subject for a lot of Penn State football fans. Not this last bowl game, but the bowl game before that, when all the players decided to sit out and not go because of the NFL combine. They don't want to get hurt. Now, with this name, you know, and the excuse was, well, they get hurt, they're going to lose out on all this money. But now with this name, image, likeness, you know, we've got that going on now. I mean, is there any way that that might be able to, I don't want to use the word leverage or force them, but now it's like, okay, you are getting compensated now. You know, you don't have that excuse of, I don't want to get hurt.
A great question. And the NFL is the ultimate goal for these kids, and it's financially the case. Plus, they grew up dreaming, you know, of being a Philadelphia Eagle, or I guess on this side of the state, a Pittsburgh Steeler, right? And so that's the part of it. And every time, you know, I get frustrated with exactly what you talked about, players, hey, I'm not going to play in the bowl game. I've got a career at risk here. I say, put yourself in their place. Or how about if you're a parent of that kid? And it has happened where kids have broken a leg in a bowl game, and it literally costs them millions of dollars. So if it were your son in that position, and he said, hey, Dad, you know, I'm going to be a first, second-round draft pick. I'm going to come home with a multi-million-dollar check if I don't play in the bowl game. If I play in the bowl game, there's a chance I may not come home with that check. That's a pretty strong incentive, and it's pretty hard to tell those guys not to do it. Now, the point you make about NIL, what I wish they would do at least is in the bowl games, they're making a lot of money, the bowl games. Could they somehow turn that NIL into, you know what, we're going to give X dollars not to pay the players to play, but to promote the game. Name, image, likeness, right? That's what it's called. How about giving them some of that money to promote the game? And I think they would be able to arrange that. But if you think that that will never happen again, what I will tell you is this, though. With the 14 playoffs, have we ever seen a kid sit out of the playoffs? And starting next year, it'll be a 12-team playoff. I don't think anyone will sit out of that either, because you've got a national championship at stake. And, you know, once Penn State, they make a 12-team playoff, so I expect Penn State to be in that every year. Who the hell cares about those other games anyway, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I would just, I guess the counter-argument would be about getting hurt is, you know, if you believe in the law of averages, that kid is just as likely to get hurt in a regular season game as he is a bowl game.
No, it's a valid point, but I think when you get so close to that target, and I'm glad you brought that up, and, you know, I don't want to cast aspersions on the COVID year, but there were multiple players who sat out the whole season. And I don't want to say it was an excuse, but you know what? And that whole balancing act, you know what? I'm going to be a first-round pick whether I play this season or not. And that's what I'm wondering. They broke the ice a few years back by the first couple of players saying, I'm not going to play in the bowl game. What I'm wondering is, will we reach the point where a good player says, you know what? Should I even play my last year of eligibility?
Yeah.
And, you know, Micah Parsons, he was part of that COVID thing. But it was brought up, Trevor Lawrence, he won a national championship already at Clemson. He was going to be a number one pick whether he played his last season or not. Okay. Could you really, really be that upset if the kid said, you know what? I'm not going to play my last season. And I'm going to still be the number one draft pick next year and make all the money. In fact, I could spend this last season getting myself in NFL shape, and I could perhaps be an even better player because of it. I'm afraid that, you know, one day that's going to happen. That was kind of a negative kind of answer there, wasn't it? Somebody asked me another question where I could be positive. Oh, here we go. Pressure's on you. You got to ask me a question where I could be positive.
I'm AJ, also from the Du Bois area. So I don't know if this is going to be able to give you a positive. This is more just kind of a meat and potatoes team question. So we've touched on, you know, pretty much every aspect of, you know, offense, defense, except I kind of wanted to round out the special teams, or not special, the specialty opposition. So, you know, we've got phenomenal running back duo, you know, brand new quarterback, but he's had this whole offseason. So my question is, you know, we've long since been, you know, kind of known for, you know, defense, linebackers, and every year or so, you know, it seems like we have one standout wide receiver or one standout tight end, you know, and especially lately, you know, we just have tight ends just going to the NFL like crazy. So, you know, there's all this talk about Drew Aller, you know, but he's going to have guys in those positions that can actually, you know, make plays consistently that he can constantly depend on. And so we kind of had a mix last year of, you know, people that were out there catching the ball. Is there somebody in each of those positions, wide receiver and tight end, that you feel this year is going to kind of step up and be his, like, number one standout go-to?
That is another great question. I'm saying that a lot here because I like the questions. You guys know your football up here in Erie, don't you? It's a great question because when you start to talk about any aspect of the offense, so much leans on something else. We talk Singleton and Catron Allen, great running backs. Yeah, good offensive line helps that. Passing game is helped by the running game if you're worried about the running back. The Drew Aller, good quarterback's going to help the receivers and vice versa. And I think, you know, there was a change at wide receiver coach, right? And the two general aspects of a coach is recruiting and development. And candidly, I think both fell short, you know, at wide receiver. And so will it be different this year? I think the change at coach was necessary, was good. I'm glad that James made that change. And as far – there's a lot of opportunity for guys to step up. There's a lot of names there. And yet will someone – I'll give you a couple names of guys that I like. Everyone's talking about Lambert Smith as being the number one, and Dante Cephas is coming in as from the transfer portal. I like Trey Wallace. I think the tools are there. I think he can go up and get the ball, athleticism. There's a lot there. Omari Evans, he's the speed guy who could run away from people. I like Sean Clifford, but I think his deep ball was not the best. I think Omari Evans will be really helped by having Drew Aller there. And I think Trey Wallace, it's just a matter of reps, maturity. I feel like the tools are there. So those are the two names I'll point out to you there. For tight end, it's becoming tight end you. It's just whose turn is it? And it's Theo Johnson is going to be a star, I believe. Tyler Warren is very good. They're talking up Khalil Dinkins. But I'll give you a name for the future. How's that? Maybe not this year. There's a young man by the name of Andrew Rappelyag. He's in this incoming class. We may not see it this year, but we're going to see it. If you got to go watch his high school tape. The guy is for real. And just one more, I'll just mention this, and I'm going way out ahead here. In next year's class, they brought in a tight end that from New England that he was a so-so three-star guy. They brought him in. No one cared. Well, he started going to camps. All of a sudden, he's a top 100 player. He's next in line. So look out for that. So that's a positive answer, right? That one was good. All right. Anyone else? Come on. Yeah, come on up. Yep, you're allowed.
Have you ever heard of Cooper Cousins?
Huh. Now, he wouldn't be a kid from Erie, would he?
He might be. He's coming.
He is, and a high school guy. He's one of your own. And I am really looking forward to talking to him one of these days, Scott. And he's a big kid. He's got a lot of tools. You guys should be very proud of him. And we're going to hear a lot about Cooper Cousins. How is that for another positive answer? Erie Zone, Cooper Cousins. All right, who we got?
Hi, Jim. It's Jim from Erie. We both agree that Manny Diaz probably isn't going to be here much longer. Do we have any experienced coaches from within that's going to step up, or will we have to go outside to find a coordinator?
It's another interesting question. And again, we just had a similar topic. We were talking about the two new coaches that came in this past year. The Hagans, who came in as a wide receiver coach, who they brought in from outside, and Deion Barnes, who was on the defensive line, who was an internal hire that they promoted. Now, I think the difference is not one is better than the other. And in fact, I think it's great within James Franklin's staff that there's a mixture. Guys who they bring in ideas and experience from elsewhere, and also the ability to hire from within. Now, specifically when you're talking about defensive coordinator, there's been a couple of guys who've been there on, the staff on the defensive side. I kind of like Poindexter, the safeties coach. And, I think he's one of those who, and if you don't make him a defensive coordinator soon, he's probably going to go somewhere else to become a coordinator. And my only hope, we talked earlier about James Franklin, the CEO, and how he deals with the coordinators. And again, Manny Diaz, I think he's brilliant, does spectacular things, but he's also fulfilling what James Franklin wants from a defensive coordinator. And James will still be here. And if you like that style of play that Manny Diaz is showing us, and show of hands or clap, who likes the way Manny Diaz plays defense, his style? Yeah. I don't like it. I love it. Okay? I love it. I think we will continue to see that style whether Manny is here or not. I think that legacy will live on even after he moves on. So, good, that was great. We got another positive kind of note there. Come on up. We've got another question. Are we going too long here, Scott, or are you okay with this?
Not
too long. All right.
Thad also from Erie.
Hey, Thad.
I wanted to end on a positive note too here. So, all of people worrying and having anxiety about the defensive line, I think the one thing that has helped me keep it in perspective is remember there's two or three linebackers that are the next line, and these guys are as good as any, I believe. So even if they get past the line, they got to get by our linebackers.
It's a great point, and that is part of, the run defense isn't just the front four, which is a good point, Thad, and these guys – also have gotten bigger and stronger. All right, another round of applause for who here is a big Abdul Carter fan? He was big and strong and fast last year. Do you know what he is this year? Bigger and stronger and faster, which is going to be part of helping out on the run defense. And isn't it interesting, a year ago when we were talking about linebackers, is linebacker, I'm not sure what we got back there. Curtis Jacobs coming off injury, and then what? And this year we're like, oh my God, we don't have enough playing time for these guys. And you hear about people like Tony Rojas coming in. So it's a great point, Thad. It's that the linebackers are part of that, and they are bigger, stronger, faster, deeper, all of those things, that linebacker. They really are. So good point and a very good positive point. So I'll take that one too.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Scott.
Come here. Third time calling.
Let's hear it, Scott.
First of all, thanks for coming out tonight.
My pleasure.
As you've seen, our reach includes both of our D-Boys and alums of Pulp Fiction. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. And now it includes Bloomsburg and Berwick, so God bless us. What parting thoughts do you want to leave us with about the 2023 team?
Okay, very, very good way to wrap it up. I said I want to leave on a positive note. And talking overall about this 23 team, how in the world could you not be excited about this team? And I'm going to, a part of my answer, I'm going to give something I've said multiple times that will make, I'm going to make the most stupid statement ever, okay? Until you think about it a little bit, then you'll realize I'm actually brilliant. Or maybe you won't. We often get the question, what will it take for Penn State to get from really good to elite, which means beating Ohio State or beating Michigan? And the dumb statement I make is they need more good players. And what I mean is they need more difference makers. And when they've played Ohio State or Michigan, the other side has always had more difference makers, elite players. What do I mean by that kind of player? Think about last year against Ohio State and what that defensive end, whose name I still can't pronounce, what he did to Penn State. He changed that game by himself. Well, guess what? Penn State this year, difference makers, running back, a left tackle who's all world, hopefully the quarterback. They've got like three defensive ends that are difference makers. Adisa Isaac, Chop Robinson, who you know about. Deny Dennis Sutton, the youngster, who might be better than the other two. Abdul Carter at linebacker. Kalen King at cornerback. These guys are all difference makers. It's been a long time since Penn State could match up against the best teams in the country with that many difference makers. So if there's anyone here who's not excited about this team, you're not paying attention. How's that? Lake Erie Chapter, Penn State Alumni Group, thank you so much for having me here. I've enjoyed it. It's fantastic. And love chatting with all of you. Thank you and good night.
Keystone Sports Network.